On Radio 3, the Early Music Show. And as part of the BBC's special season on aspects of dance, Lucy's Keeping's in York to find out about some of the intricacies of medieval terpsichore.
Majesty's Sackbuts and Cornets playing Tondernacken, a piece based on an old Flemish tune and composed, or at least arranged, by that most musical of English monarchs, Henry VIII. Part of his court songbook, so-called, compiled probably around 1510. Welcome to the Early Music Show. I'm here at the National Centre for Early Music in York with an audience of, I should say, fearless folk who've come along to try their skills in the art of medieval dance. More of which later. I'm also joined for today's programme by Darren Royston, chairman of the Early Dance Circle and the artistic director of Nonsuch History and Dance. And you might well have also seen him recently as the dancing master in BBC4's Dancing Cheek to Cheek programme. Darren, welcome. And I must say particularly welcome, since you've come in full medieval costume. He's wearing a long green tunic, a very elegant rust-coloured tabard, and the most gorgeous soft leather pointy shoes, all very medieval. I think we're all looking forward to throwing a few shapes under your expert tutelage. If nothing else, I guess we'll all shed a few sort of collective calories, won't we? So what do we know about court dancing from the early Tudor period, Darren?
Well, as you were just explaining, this piece of music by Henry VIII, we thought, let's start at the very end of what could possibly be a medieval period. And as you say, it's the early Tudor period, but it's the English court, but they're really sharing this very European culture. I just want to give you a little description of dancing that we know about with Henry VIII, is when he went to France for the Field of the Cloth of Gold. We have in the chronicles all the descriptions of how the English court went over and danced with the French court, and the French court came over and danced with the English court in their particular tents. And we know that there was hours and hours of dancing. We know this happened after all the tournaments and the jousting. But unfortunately, even at such a great event, we have no evidence about what dances they actually did. We have a little amount of information, and what we have to do, a bit like detectives, is piece together lots of information. Sometimes you're describing the costumes. That's one of the reasons why I've put the costume on, because thinking about what they're wearing influences what kind of movement they did. And so we have some evidence from pictures and visual things. But we also have references to certain dances that are done in England, which are clearly from other European countries. So that's what we're going to look at a bit in this programme. Our first dance is actually the Basque dance, and it's the French Basque dance. And we have an English treatise by Robert Copeland, which is actually written at the back of a guide to how you pronounce French. And then at the back, it's just written some notes about how to do the Basque dance. But the first thing you have to do is show reverence. Every time you even enter the room in this period, you'd have to show reverence. Reverence is to revere or to respect. So you're looking at someone and then you're giving them a second look. Now, what you do with your body, we don't really know, but from pictures, when they're wearing their very long, flowing dresses, is they're letting one leg just push back. So you're actually doing, I think, we're doing a lunge, I think you might describe it. And it's really, isn't it? It's using your core stability, a bit like Pilates almost. It's sort of medieval Pilates. So if I meet Lucy here, then we have our eye contact, and we have a little rise before we then fall back and leave the leg back. Now, where you place your leg, we have lots of different paintings. And if you're feeling a little unstable, you might just want to do a little bend of the knee. But it is very much about bending of the knee. So that's the first thing. And why I'm teaching you this is part of the dance, is actually doing a reverence as part of the music.
I'm feeling almost important.
Are you feeling almost important? Good. Now, when you've done that, you've got to get going. So in these Basque dances, they say you have to do a brawl. It's the French brawl. Actually, in modern French now, it's not a very polite thing to do, but it means to sway from one side to the other. And again, we don't have exact interpretations, although one of the manuscripts says, make sure you don't look like you're pressing the grapes to make wine, which if you were pressing the grapes, you'd be pushing from side to side. So this is the first piece of evidence. It's telling us what not to look like. You actually have to do it gracefully. And once you've got into the room, so if you would like to take a partner, you're swaying from one side to the other. It's really, you've got that upward feeling of nobility. And if you think about the ladies may have these wimple headdresses, so you've got to keep that upward feeling. And then you always start off with the single step. So it's just one step and a second step. And then you do double steps, which are one, two, three, and we've now started to run out of space here because we're in front of each other. But you will always do those in odd numbers because it's all balanced mathematically. And if you want to go backwards, you do a reprise. Now, you could just do the same thing, three steps backwards, one, two, three. But one of the manuscripts, the Toulouse manuscripts, suggests that you use this to step so that you can see the wonderful lady who you're dancing with, so you get that moment. So in a way, these dances are about processing around, looking very proud, okay? And then also always remembering your partner.
Should we try some of the steps out with music?
I think that
sort of really brings them to life, doesn't it? And we're actually lucky to have four musicians with us here today who are going to play for all our dances. Please welcome everybody and a round of applause for Ian Hoggett, Tim Bailey, Lizzie Guthridge, and Martin Scheuriger. Hey. And they're playing harp, wind, viols and drums, and probably a lot more as we go along.
Great. So, we're going to do one of the Basque dance from the Brussels manuscript called the Dance of Cleves, and we'll do this as a procession. So, if me and Lucy will lead the procession, is that okay?
Absolutely.
Looking like we are part of Richard III's court, I think the easiest thing is if you just follow the person in front. So, good luck. Double steps now. Single steps. And don't forget to look at your partner on the reprise. And sway together with the brawl steps. Looking important as you process around the room. This is your arrival dance to any of these great medieval banquets. And you're watching everyone around you as you know everyone's watching you. You're showing off your finery. And then never forgetting the partner next to your side. And reverence to your partners. Well done, that was great. Well, we felt quite important. Didn't you feel quite important?
It was a very gentle dance. I mean, to me, that was almost more like a sort of organised procession rather than perhaps what one might think about dancing. What was very nice, though, was the sort of built-in eye contact with partners. I think many of us, I don't know about you lot, but I certainly still found it quite hard to remember the different sort of moves and the patterns. Darren, I of course, dancing has always been an important social skill, still is to some extent. But how did people back then learn the steps? Because some of the dancers obviously more complicated than that.
Yes, there were lots of different types of dances, and so some of the dances were clearly taught by dancing masters and for the court. And the evidence we have is from the nobility. So we know from those type of people that they would have had people teaching them the dance, that they would have learnt it together as part of their royal court. We also know they were used in pageantry and things like that. So different dances, as you were saying, that dance was very sedate and grand, but other dances are not necessarily as slow or not necessarily as majestic. It was always something that were done by the young gentlemen of the time to woo their ladies. And we have one manual written by Antonius Arena, and this chap, Arena, tells us things about how you hold hands. And it says the gentleman must always have ungloved hands, because that's the only part of the costume that isn't covered. So you're actually communicating where you're going on the dance floor with the hands, and that's your way of giving communication to your partners. He also talks about where your eyes should be. You were mentioning earlier about how you look into people's eyes and seeing each other. And he says, you know, you should have a smile, a pleasant gaze. Even if you're concentrating on these steps, because they're so complicated, he says you mustn't concentrate as if you are constipated. You know, you might think that's a little bit rude. Well, he's writing it in Macaronic Latin for his friends, ad suos compagnas, to his other lawyers, people who are training as lawyers. So they were doing it to have a lot of fun. I mean, he actually says, make sure you tie your codpiece on, sir. We don't want that dropping halfway through the dance. So he's very, very light-hearted in his way. But even so, he tells you all the specifics of the dancing. So, yes, you're absolutely right. They had to be taught certain things, and there was a certain etiquette. But also, we hope that if you were of the right status, you'd know what to do.
So there were a lot of prescribed moves and steps. Was there any opportunity for sort of doing your own thing a little bit more?
Well, the evidence we have dance music of the 13th century, which we know is dance music because it's called estampi. But strangely, it's not regular. It's written in a very strange form. So we think that now you have to fit your dancing to that particular pattern. So that's the dance we're going to do next. It's from the French Royal Estampi collection. It's the fourth one we're going to do. And the way it's structured is you have a tune, a little bit of the melody, and then you have an open ending, we call it, an apertum. And then you have that melody again, and then the clausum, the closed end. Now, estampi could mean, some people have said, it could mean that it's a stamping dance.
It does sound like it.
Yeah. So the last time we were here at the National Centre for Early Music, we used this dance to show anger. So I thought you and I might have this as a little bit of an angry dance.
So, Darren, you've got your group on one side of the dance floor. I'm with mine over this side. I've got this sense that we're looking at each other like sort of two opposing armies. Is there a sense of a battle going on here?
Yes, this is going to be a battle dance on the dance floor of the estampi number 4. And we're going to do this as a little drama, as if we're getting more and more angry with each other. We'll start with a reverence. I arrive on the dance floor. My team go. And turn. Lucy starts. And Lucy's team go. Turn around. I set off walking to one side, and I turn to see you off ago, two, and turn around, stamp, 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 and Lucy goes. And her group go, one, two, three, two, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, stamp, stamp, stamp. Now I'm going to circle all around her, showing who I am, and then I'm going round, two, oh, one, two, three, two, two, three, turn. Stamp, stamp. Now she can go around anywhere she wants. And your group can follow round. So you can follow your leader as you go round. Two, 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 three, stamp, stamp, stamp. Turn around. Stamp, stamp. Now we can join hands, palm to palm. So go and find someone from the other group and join it round. That's it. Go and find someone you're going to battle with. Other way, round with the other hand.
ground. Now the fighting starts. Step and you have a little slap. Step and a slap and turn. And one, two, three, two, two, three, stamp, two, three, turn. Stamp other way, slap and slap and slap. Oh, one, two, three, two, three, stamp, two, three, round. Follow your leader now. So you're all following me, and everyone's following Lucy's team. Round they go. Come together, find the person you were battling with, and offer your hand, and finish. Two, and one, two, three. Turn around and reverence to your partners. And bow to your partner.
That's a really interesting theme, because it was that mix of sort of meeting somebody and admiring them and having kind of a dignified relationship, and then sort of all that slapping and fighting at the same time. It's dance floor battle.
Yes, I mean, we based all that idea on a torneo dance, as if you're actually having a battle on the dance floor. What we'd know is that these dances were used in dramatic context, so we can think about the patterning telling that particular story. But the main dancing that we think they were doing was circle dances. Remember we said it was called a brawl, or branle, where you sway from one time to the other. Well, this idea of brawling is also fighting. So we have this idea that these circle dances are called brawls. And in a later manuscript of Thuano Arbo, you know, which is in the 16th century, he talks about these brawls being done for many, many, many years before, and it's as if they're handed down. And he goes through a suite of brawls, having the double brawl, the double singles, combining those sticks.
This is the book that Warlock referred to for his Capriole suite.
This has been an inspiration for those kind of Renaissance pieces of music, absolutely. And it has music within it with dance instruction, which is why you can kind of use it as a basis for the earlier period. And they have different styles of dances. So what I thought we'd do is put that together, really, having this drama between people, but also a circle dance. So we can all come up to the floor again and make a big, big circle. And we're going to have a look at the washerwoman's brawl. Right, so here we are. We're in a big circle, and we're going to try one of these brawl dances. Now, Lucy, you're my partner here.
Okay.
So the lady is now customary on the right, possibly because the man's still got his sword here, hanging on his left, you know. But this is a circle dance, so you see pictures of people all holding hands. So we're all holding hands in a circle. You know, Shakespeare uses this in Midsummer Night's Dream between Oberon and Titania, you know, when she wants them all to dance beautiful fairy ringlets to the whistling wind. She says, "You, Oberon, with thy brawls thou hast disturbed our sport." So it's this kind of joke of brawling being dancing and fighting. The gentleman on the right decides to tell his washerwoman off. Maybe she's obviously not been cleaning the shirts or something. So he puts his finger out and wags it one way and steps the other. And then the manuscript says she responds while he's doing that by putting her hands on her hips. So she's really not very pleased with him. So he gives two little wags of the finger, and then she does the same thing to him and says, "Well, I don't care," and gives him something to think about. And then it says, you then slap your hands together as if you are taking the washing onto the rocks of the River Seine. So how they would have done the washing. So let's see how we do. So this is a 16th century dance, but it actually has the style of these medieval circle dances.
And of course it would have been courtly, very sort of socially elevated people who in a way, I guess they were kind of imitating the lower orders, the washerwomen and so on.
I think they probably were, mimicking and so you can have a lot of fun here. So here we are, the washerwoman's brawl. All joining hands. And double to the left, and back you go. And double to the left. Men, turn to your partners, wave your fingers. Ladies, respond. Slapping. And back to place. Slapping into the circle. Three kicks. Off we go again, doubling left. Turn to your partners. Ladies, slapping the washing. Back you go. Slapping the washing.
kicks. Last time, round we go. Actually, it's a bit like the modern washing machine, isn't it? Round it goes one way and round it goes the other way. Turn to your partners, really telling them off. And she responds, here's the slapping. And back to place, turning in, around you go. Big kicks to finish. Oh, well done.
I thought that was a wonderful dance. It's interesting that we're dancing in a circle. I mean, quite a lot of folk dances do that today. And was this common practice right back in the medieval period?
We have a lot of paintings, visual imagery of when people are having festivals all around Europe, that there are these dances in circles, and it is a very popular thing. And what's interesting is that they also would call it caroling, because they'd be singing while they were dancing. So now we have Christmas carols, but also they would have had carols for spring and for summer, and this idea of singing while we dance.
What about dancing in lines?
Well, exactly. If we were all joined up now as a circle, to make it a line, all that would have to happen is one person would let go. If this were a feudal society, then I would be in charge and I would be the most important. Here would be my second in command, my third in command, fourth in command. It goes all the way down the line until we get to the lowest of the low down here. Okay. But I'm making sure everybody sees everybody. So I'm dancing round to the left. And then you might do different patterns. So you just follow the line round. So our musicians are going to play a dance called the Ducktier, which is related to a medieval tune. This is like the first figure it talks about is the meander, you know, meandering around. So let's have the music, and I'll call out some different figures and patterns, and we'll see what we can do with our, this would be called in modern time, a farandole. So here we go. And you can be doing any form of steps, leading round and moving. As I say, meandering round. Meandering like a river. In fact, some people have said, I mean, this might be the earliest form of river dance, because we're actually making that pattern of the river on the floor. Then I might turn to my partner, make an arch, and number three goes through. He's leading the line now. Off you go, Paul. And he's leading. And I'm going to join in to my line. I'm joining my lowest of the low lady here, but I found I've got Lucy still there beneath me. Even lower, there we are. Now, Paul might come into the circle, and as you see, if to explain to the people watching at home, to listening at home, you can see him making his spiral. In he goes, tighter and tighter. He's getting closer to the center, and looking from above, some people have said this looks like a snail shell. So they've called it l'escargot, the French for the snail. Now he's come out, unwinding. He's going to turn to his partner and make an arch. And number three comes through. And as soon as you come through, you make an arch. And the next person comes through. That's right, come this side and make an arch. That's it. And next one comes through. And then at the end, you're going to join in with that line. And through you go. And it's endless. That's it. And now Lucy can join me again. Round we go. Now I might lift my arms and we're making a shape a bit like the church windows. Here they are in the York National Centre for Early Music. They've got that lovely weave and you're following through, making a weave through the arches. Well done, well done. So you can see how you can make lots of different patterns. Where there we were making the shape of the church windows.
It's gorgeous, really sort of satisfying to dance as well, because there's a real sense of community. But it's not actually too difficult.
No.
And it's all about the shapes and less about fancy footwork. It's lovely.
And also it's about leadership as well, about how you're making those shapes. This dance is painted in the murals in Siena, which is painted in the early 14th century. And you see them actually lifting their arms and making this pattern. So it was danced to show how good we are as a community working together. So
yeah, it was very much a communal dance. What about the sort of dances that people tend to do at weddings these days? The bride and groom, just the two of them, when everybody's around them watching. Were there medieval dances for two people, almost like an exhibition dance?
Well, we have a lot of evidence of those type of dances from the Italian courts. And in the 15th century, this becomes the height of this type of dancing. Evidence we have is of a particular dancing master called Domenico of Piacenza. And he has two disciples who also write about these dances, Antonio Cornazzano and Guglielmo Ebreo. So they've really become my friends, these dancing masters, because they've written so much information. So Domenico and Antonio and Guglielmo, I like to call them Dom, Tony and Will, really, because that's how they've become. Because they talk to you very, very familiarly, and they explain all the different styles. They each have a different take on things, and a lot of the choreographies are by Domenico. Guglielmo gives us lots of information about the style, and Cornazzano a lot about the sort of mathematical structure. But these are the sort of ideas that you were saying, where two people might dance in front of a court. We know that at the Medici court, you know, Lorenzo of Medici actually writes his own choreography for some of these things. There's one called Venus, obviously about love. And we know when Leonardo da Vinci goes to the court of Lodovico da Forza in Milan in 1490, he creates the Festa del Paradiso, the Feast of Heaven. And here, with all the planets on view, they have this dance to show the two courts coming together in marriage. So ideas of couple dancing is very, very important.
Let's listen to one of these Italian dances. This has got rather a strange name. It's called Rostiboli. I mean, thinking of these romantic couples doing a dance, I wonder if that's got anything to do with the heat of love, Rosti.
Well, it certainly could, because Rostiboli Gioso implies roasted and boiled, which, as you say, might be this sort of hot and steamy idea of the dance. But really, it's roasted and boiled because of what's going on in the feasting at the time. You know, it's a bit like on a menu where you might have a description of the course, and maybe that's when the dancing would have occurred after that particular course. Who knows?
Like we might call it a tea dance, I suppose.
Exactly, a tea dance. You're not dancing with a teacup. Indeed. Like here, you're not dancing Rostiboli with a piece of roasted meat. But you never know, because we have so little information, really, to know exactly why these titles have been applied to different dances. But here we are, a recording of this dance, Rostiboli.
Thank you.
Rostiboli, a medieval court dance for loving couples, and very sensual, apparently. It was played there by members of Ensemble Gaita. You're listening to The Early Music Show on BBC Radio 3 with me, Lucy Skeeping. And today we're at the National Centre for Early Music in York, and I'm joined by the early dance specialist, Darren Royston. Darren, that was a couple's dance, and I guess it was used to display emotion. We kind of feel how they felt towards each other, those watching the dance.
Yes, that's certainly what we imagine, because we know that the descriptions of the dance is for one couple doing this choreography on the in front of a court. But it's really the moment where the lady would meet the man for the first time. I mean, we know that young ladies of the Italian court were trained by dancing masters in these particular choreographies before the moment of the dance. So it is a moment where the passions and the emotions must be shown in public view. So yes, these dances, although the music might sound as if it's very repetitive, when you have that choreography, it has that power of meeting. And one of the skills was how you divided this dance floor, the compartimento di terreno, how you divide the space and how close you got. And this would lead into the drama. And some of the titles of the dances kind of give this away. I mean, the next dance we're going to look at is called Gelosia, Jealousy. And this is a dance for three couples. But it allows the gentleman to then suddenly see the lady behind him. And he then starts dancing with the lady behind him. Well, that allows that man to move up and dance with the first lady. And then he moves on to the third lady, and the third lady can dance with the second man. So you can see how the jealousy starts to build up in the choreography. So we've got some willing volunteers who are going to come and learn this. What I need to tell you to dance these 15th century Italian dances is how they made them different to what dancers have been doing before is that they structured them, they choreographed them using different rhythms. So you remember the first dance we did was the French bass dance. Well, the Italian bassa dance is a similar idea, is that it's a slow rhythm. And then it can get a little bit faster to the quadernaria, the four-square rhythm, and then even more lively for the saltarello, which means jumping and lively. And this dance is going to start with the saltarello. And then the fastest rhythm than that is called a piva. Now, that is the name also given to the bagpipes in the Italian court at the time. So it's a bit like the peasants might do, you know, running around wildly in the fields. So once you get your new partner, that's what you do in this dance. You're let loose and you can run wildly around. So are you ready, do you think, to do this dance of jealousy? All right, here we go. Saltarello goes one, two, three, step, step, hops. Here you go. Again, one, two, three, and little hops. Here we go. Here we are. It's lovely here. All the candles are lit and beautiful. You can imagine it in the Italian courts. And you all stand still as the first man off he goes. He sees the second lady. He reverences. The man moves up. But he's off again. He sees the next lady. He bows to her. He moves up. And we all join hands. And we piva, now going as fast as you can. And then the first couple turn. And the first couple turn. And the second couple turn. And the third couple turn. Take hands and change place. And the other hand, change place. And off we go again. One, two, three. And hop, two, three. So as you can see here at the National Centre for Early Music, we're dancing over the gravestones even here at the St Mary's Church. It's quite fun, but the candles are lit. It's all very mysterious. And you stand still as the next man comes around here. He sees the next lady. He bows. As he does, he moves up. She's moving up. You see the next lady. Oh my goodness, you bow to her. And you're all together. Now, the piva goes, that's it. Now, as I say, this is the fastest step in the Italian repertoire, so you're running as fast as you can. Then the first couple turn. And you can imagine all their costumes being on show as they turn. Take hands, remember the contact of the hand is very important. Showing an opportunity for a little bit of intimacy. Off you go again, the third time. Now, as you can see, they've all changed places. Well, you can't see, you have to believe me. They've all changed places. And they're jumping around the room with their saltarelli. And then they come to a standstill.
and the next man goes. It's his chance. Look at Lucy. Bertie returns to the next lady. And moving on to the next person. And get ready. Here's our fast Peeber. Peeber, 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 Peeber. So we're going as fast as we can around here. And we're back to our normal position. They turn. Now, what do you feel? Are you still jealous of the people behind you? What do you feel at this point? Changing place and changing hands. And a final reverence to your partner. Great. So exactly, let's round of applause for that. So it is a little bit like an Italian early Renaissance speed dating opportunity where you get a little moment to dance with each person and then on you go.
Phew, so that was an Italian dance called a jealousy. You told us a little about the sources for French dancers, Darren, the steps, that is. Are there any really usable or practical sources for the English dancing, or is it a bit speculative?
Well, we know that the English were dancing. As I say, we have evidence of dancing. But I'm going to call on a couple of experts now, because as chairman of the Early Dance Circle, I represent lots of different groups and different people who have taken time to be very specialist and have looked at particular periods of history and the dancing. And there's something that happened very recently, really, where we found some evidence specifically of English dancing. So we're going to welcome Anne and Paul Kent, who have been working on this particular manuscript.
Thank you. The sources, as Darren has said, that all the dances you've done so far come from France and Italy and some other European areas. We had no knowledge of specific English dances for this period until in 1996, Professor David Fallows found and published a source of a notebook from John Baines in the Gresley of Draclo papers, which are kept in Derbyshire Record Office. They were dated about 1500.
And it wasn't just specifically done. This was a collection of lots of different papers of different things. So it's just one thing in this collection. That's why we hadn't found it till then.
That's right. It is not a dance book as such. Mm-hmm. It's a notebook with all sorts of other information in it.
And so you devoted your next part of your life to it.
In order to encourage the performance of these dances, because we thought they were so important, Paul and I made an in-depth study of the manuscript. Now, there are no step descriptions, and at times the details of the choreographies are very sketchy. However, using our knowledge of the contemporary French and Italian sources and taking note of the context, we've been able to develop a consistent step vocabulary and style.
Right, so Paul here, he's been doing them practically with you, so and I'm here to learn some of these dances myself.
Right,
so
well, I'm just going to briefly describe some of these steps.
Okay, very good.
A mive is a gesture made with the shoulders, which relates to the Italian movimento.
Yes, Guglielmo de Ebreo, one of those Italian dancing masters, talks a lot about the maniera of the style of using your shoulders and looking like a peacock, pavongiere. So I suppose it's how you present yourself in these steps.
Mm-hmm. And then we have the fleur-de-lis.
Oh.
And this is a flourish, first by moving, circling one foot and then the other, so that you're drawing a pattern of a fleur-de-lis on the floor. Now, these dances are all for either for two or three people, and they're numbered in the text, but none are stated as being women. So we don't know whether these dances were done by all men or by a mix of men and women. And it's also not specified whether it's just one couple or one threesome on the floor, or whether you have a column of dancers or make a procession.
Paul is the expert here. So would you mind, Anna, if I partnered Paul?
If
it doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman, we'll have two men dancing together.
And they're going to dance a dance called Rorty.
Eight trace doubles around the room. That's two, that's three. Four, five, six, seven, that's the eight. Now this tret and retret, forward and back. It says three singles forwards, one, two, three. Backward three singles, one, two, three. We repeat that, tret and retret. And the singles backwards. Now, tret and retret, but this time we separate.
and we have this fleur-de-lis pattern and three singles forward. Now we do this little rackets away and away, and then another of these fleur-de-lis, and we're back to the beginning. Well done, thank you. Good. So that's the basic choreography that fits it. Everyone at home has listened to that, I hope. They may need to keep replaying that until they get the steps, but now we're going to put on the recording that's done by the York Weights of this particular dance, and so we can imagine that you would dance it all together in a column.
York Weights with the medieval English dance Rorty from the Gresley manuscript. Well, Paul Kent has joined me now. Now, you and Anne have been reconstructing the dances and the music from this Gresley manuscript. Do we know anything about the man who actually left it to us, who wrote it?
We know tantalizingly nothing. He is one of those ghost-like figures who simply wrote this document. He was obviously a very erudite man. He has several topics of conversation within the book, of which dance is simply one, but he also talks about chiromancy and physiognomy. These are all things about character assessment through features of either the palm or the face. And of course, a lot of prayers in Latin too, and his abbreviations in Latin suggest that he was very, very familiar with Latin. So we're talking about someone who was very, very educated. And educated people generally tended to be attached to wealthy landowners, even titled people. And I think this is what we can safely assume about John Baines, whatever else we don't know about him.
Thank you very much. Darren, if I could just bring you over here for a moment. Certainly, I think everybody here will agree that you've been very patient with us all as we've been learning the dance steps from you. Presumably, though, not everyone in these very early centuries would have had the advantage of a one-to-one dancing master. Depends on the class, I guess.
Exactly. It depends on where you were in that status level, really. I mean, the nobility clearly had people who would be doing the music and the dance and preparing for these big feasts and ceremonies. But really, we do know that everybody enjoyed doing the dancing. We know that it was something done by everyone from all walks of life, and we have evidence of those big communal occasions. So it's good, although, as we're saying from this evidence, we have very little detail of what kind of dance steps were done to these social dances, these almost folk dances. We know that they must have done something. So I think I enjoy my job as a dance historian by putting all these little bits together and seeing what you can find in the interpretation.
And strangely, you know, having sort of really attempted them almost for the first time just now, you do get a sense that people weren't that different from us today. You know, they're the sort of dances they want to, the sort of way they want to relate to their partner, the way they look at each other, the way perhaps one couple will dance and everybody will watch. I mean, these are all things I can recognise today.
Exactly. I think the most important thing is that it's fun, is that they're doing dance. I mean, now we have to study all the manuscripts as we've been showing and think about how they might have interpreted. But then I think, you know, as now, the dancing is just part of life's way of enjoying yourself and having a good time. I mean, and all of us as part of the early dance circle go to summer schools and weekend workshops. I mean, I run one here in Yorkshire, the Nonsuch Summer School, and people come for a few days and discover the dances for the first time. And they, just like you say, they find out that actually it's just having a good time through the different dances and then learning about how the differences were for each different period, you know, through time.
We've got time for one more dance today, talking of time. What do you have in store for us?
Well, I wanted to do something at the end that brought this together. So I think one of the most famous medieval carols, if you like, is a spring carol into summer called Summer is A-Coming In, which I'm sure everyone will know. It's one of the earliest examples, they say, of a six-part polyphonic writing, which is quite impressive. As you may know, the song is all about, you know, spring, and you can hear the cuckoos telling us that summer's on its way, and there's loads of other animals bleating and making noise. So this is where I need my audience to come, not to be animals as such, but if you'd like to come on and do a communal dance. So this can be absolutely everybody here today in the performance, if you wish, can join in. We're going to do it once through all together. And then I'm going to do something risky, because then we're going to try and dance it polyphonically, if you like, because then we're going to have the gentlemen are going to go into the middle. So the men are going to start, and we're going to go one, two, three, and then the ladies, who have to make a big circle, so join up around, are going to start on the second one. So we'll start off, summer is coming in, and then you'll start off now. Go. Summer is coming, and then you go again. One, two, three, and then the men in the middle will do the first cuckoos, and then the ladies will do the second. And then we'll be doing our little quadrant pravan, as it's really called, and round, and you'll be doing yours, and then you'll finish. And this could be, in my imagination, we could have loads and loads of circles of people moving out, a bit like an onion, where you'd start very tight and go further and further out until you've got this idea. But for today, we'll do it all together once, and then we'll try it splitting into these groups. But as Lucy was just saying, it is meant to be fun. So if it all goes disastrously wrong, then we haven't got to worry too much. Off we go to the left with our double, two, three, and back again. Well done. And round again. Now we're having the little cuckoo kicks. Here they go. Step, kick, step. And the single step, and a double. Back the other way, single step, and a double, and the cuckoo, step. And finish with your doubles, and we do all that again. Double to the left, and back to the right, again to the left, again to the right. The cuckoo kick, one, two, three, and single step, and double. So we've just created steps to fit the pattern of the music,
and a cuckoo kick, and double to the left. Now, men, are you ready? We go forward, and we start. Ladies start, left double, and men carry on. The men do the cuckoo first, and the ladies do the cuckoo as we do single steps, and the ladies do the single steps. And the men do the cuckoo in the middle, and the ladies do the cuckoo. And everybody comes back to the circle. And now follow me as I lead you around in the farandole, as we go singing in our way. We'd be singing our song. Summer is a coming in, thinking of all the amazing fertility rites of May that are on the way, ready to have lots of fun in the summer as we dance around and finish in our beautiful circle as the music comes to an end. Well done.
Well, that's been absolutely wonderful. I think we'll all agree, learning the dances. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Darren. And thanks for being our dancing master in particular. Thanks also to our musicians, Tim Bailey, Lizzie Gutteridge, Ian Hoggart, and Martin Scheuriger. And, of course, to our brilliant audience here at the National Centre for Early Music, who all joined in with a gusto. And I think it's time for us all to go out into the streets of York now to do a farandole into the early hours. Come on.
Anonymous Italian saltarello performed by the Unicorn Ensemble, bringing today's early music show to an end. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping with early dance specialist Darren Royston and produced in Salford by Les Pratt. Next week, continuing the BBC's dance season, Lucy concentrates on Renaissance dance. Well, Sarah Moore-Peach has just popped in to talk about the choir. Sarah, I can't quite see from here, but I think you're wearing dancing shoes as well, aren't you?
I am, metaphorically at least. We've got choral dances on the programme today as the BBC Young Dancer 2015 competition hots up. We're also going to be talking to English National Opera about their new production by director Mike Lee of Pirates of Penzance. My choral classic at five is Parry's I Was Glad. And we're also appealing for help. A listener has written in with a recording of herself and her sisters singing a mass that they were taught as children and learned by ear, and they have no idea what it is. And we're going to play it and see if anyone out there recognises it and can help us. So do please tune in after 4 o'clock to hear that for the choir.
Thank you very much, Sarah. We'll really look forward to that.